much stuck in ice. I mean, really just think of it as another ice floe in many ways.
The wild journey of an unmanned barge hitching a ride on the Arctic ice. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, February 26th. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, thousands of Alaskans prepare for larger checks with the minimum wage increase.
All the money I make, it goes to kids. I mean, it has been, but the extra dollar, honey, I can use for myself.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. The American Lung Association of Alaska invites you to join their premier annual cycling event, the Clean Air Challenge, on May 9th. This family-friendly one-day event begins in Talkeetna and offers routes ranging from 10 to 100 miles. This fundraiser benefits the American Lung Association to support lung health programs across Alaska. For more information, visit cleanairchallengeak.org.
Forest Service Chief Tom Tidwell defended his management of the Tongass National Forest to the U.S. Senate Energy and Natural Resources Committee today. Senator Lisa Murkowski, who chairs the panel, says the service isn't allowing enough timber sales to keep what remains of the logging industry in southeast Alaska in business. APRN's Liz Ruskin reports.
Tidwell says he's planning sales of 70 million board feet a year for the next 2 years. But Murkowski is skeptical.
We are putting up more. It's not adequate. The bridge timber we talk about to be able to provide the bridge until we can move into the second growth. We were able to get the Bighorn sell out last year. We're optimistic we'll be moving forward with it this year.
We got a little bit of an ESA issue with Bighorn. You and I both know that. So to say that we got it out there and it's going to be this big bridge out there, the people on Prince of Wales are not so optimistic about this right now.
Murkowski was referring to the Endangered Species Act and an expected battle over the Alexander Archipelago wolf. This was the last of three hearings she has held to examine budgets of the departments her committee oversees. Murkowski says the president's proposed budget for the Forest Service doesn't do right by Southeast Alaska.
I don't think you are offering anything more than you have, which is nothing. Which is nothing to the people of the Tongass.
Murkowski says she wants a solution for communities that depend on the Secure Rural Schools program. SRS distributes money to local governments in and near national forests. Last year, it provided more than $14 million for roads and schools in Alaska. But Congress let that program expire last fall, leaving in its place an old formula based on forest revenues that gives the whole state just $500,000 to share. In Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
An unmanned fuel barge that got stuck in Arctic sea ice last fall has now made it almost as far as Russia's northern coast. KUCB's Annie Ropeek has more.
It sounds like the makings of a children's book, the long, unexpected journey of a little barge called the NTAL 2. The ship got lost in an Arctic storm last October and nearly ran aground near Prudhoe Bay before getting caught up in advancing sea ice. Since then, it's traveled almost 1,400 nautical miles without ever touching solid ground, about the distance from Maine to Florida.
This thing is pretty much stuck in ice. I mean, really just think of it as another ice floe in many ways.
Mark Serez is the executive director of the National Snow and Ice Data Center. He says winter winds have pushed the 134-foot barge and the Arctic ice it's frozen in on a typical east-to-west track. It followed Canada and Alaska's northern coastlines before leaving U.S. waters and, as of this month, arriving near the Russian coast. The U.S. Coast Guard handed off this case to their Russian counterparts months ago, but they've been able to keep an eye on the barge anyway. That's thanks to a makeshift transponder from the Marine Exchange of Alaska, where Ed Page is the executive director.
We program it ahead of time. They basically made a Rube Goldberg design, 2x4s and sandbags and what have you, that allowed it to be dropped on it and not slide off, and that's what's tracking it. Pretty simple.
The transponder shows how the barge has moved and how fast. Page says it's been a better Arctic experiment than any he could have planned.
At times it's going along 3 knots or so, which is kind of thought it'd be a lot more stationary, kind of stay in a general area. Didn't really expect the ice to move that far.
But Serez at the Snow and Ice Data Center says it doesn't surprise him.
The ice cover is becoming thinner, and it's going to be more responsive to wind, and so that means it tends to move faster. But that also tends to mean that, say, these pressure ridges, ridging episodes, might become more frequent, and so maybe the barge will get in trouble that way.
So far, the barge and its 1,000 or so gallons of diesel fuel cargo seem to be intact. The vessel's owner, Northern Transportation Company Limited of Canada, did not return requests for comment on whether they plan to retrieve the barge. Coast Guard Response Commander Sean Decker says they may try recovering it in the summer when the ice melts. For now, it's serving as a good lesson for the Coast Guard on Arctic operations, like how to respond to a theoretical oil spill atop the ice. Mark Serez explains.
The barge and the track that is taken, think of it as sort of a tracer. Now, if you had an oil spill, say, north of Point Barrow or something, it would have taken basically the same track. So I think it is kind of illustrative of the issues you might have to deal with in the future, knowing how a big oil slick would move.
The Coast Guard is equipped to handle a spill on ice, says Commander Sean Decker. A spill in open water would be a bigger challenge. The science around how oil interacts with the Arctic environment is still limited. But it still wouldn't help in the case of the little barge. Decker says only a heavy-duty icebreaker could have rescued the NTAL-2 once it was ice-bound. The United States has just one of those in service, the Polar Star, which has been deployed in Antarctica all winter. In Unalaska, I'm Annie Ropeek.
Alaska's statewide minimum wage increase went into effect on Tuesday. Now, thousands of jobs in the state pay $8.75 an hour, a $1 increase. So what does this mean for Anchorage's small businesses and consumers? KSKA's Ann Hillman wandered around town to find out.
Hi, guys.
You guys can take a seat wherever you'd like.
It's a slow part of the afternoon at Peggy's restaurant. Customers wander in. A couple of regulars hang out at the counter. Waitress Susie Sander tallies up bills.
Everybody love it. $8.75 hour.
Sander has been working at Peggy's for 10 years. Soon, she'll benefit from the minimum wage increase.
All the money I make, it goes to kids. I mean, it has been, but the extra dollar, honey, I can use for myself.
William White is washing dishes in the back.
Well, I haven't seen it on my check yet, but hopefully on my next paycheck it'll help out a lot.
Yeah, what are you hoping to do with the extra money?
Pay rent.
Alaskans overwhelmingly voted for the increase last November. Minimum wage went up by a dollar this year and will again in January. Then, increases will match inflation. According to the state's Department of Labor and Workforce Development, about 16,000 jobs are affected by the increase. Dan Robinson is the chief of research and analysis at the department. He says the impact on the overall economy will be negligible.
In the macroeconomic data that we look at, it will almost certainly not be identifiable as having caused a bump here or a change in trend there.
But Robinson says it will matter to individuals. He says that 64% of the people who are working at jobs that likely pay minimum wage are over 25. One quarter are over 45. Most of them, 57%, are female. Peggy's restaurant regular, Kurt Woodard, says the increase is long overdue, and the stair-step implementation makes it workable.
The best thing they can do is just like they're doing, give them a dollar this year and a dollar next year, and then it averages out and everybody can take it a little bit at a time.
Manager Daniel Smith agrees. Most businesses can handle the small increases over time. He says that's not the issue.
Nobody that owns a business minds it. It's the fact is it's to get and your rest of your customers to understand why you're raising your prices, that you have to raise your prices because these guys cannot live on $7.75 an hour, you know.
Smith says they'll only raise their prices in small increments, 15 cents on one item, 25 cents on another. He says they'll cut some hours, too, but that's mostly because business is slower in the winter. In the long run, they may give all of their employees a raise, even the ones not making minimum wage, just to be fair. But for many small businesses in Anchorage, the minimum wage increase won't make a difference. I spoke with more than a dozen business owners who say they either pay over the minimum wage already or are so small they don't have employees anyhow. In Anchorage, I'm Ann Hillman.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the economic toll of a winter without much winter.
This winter and last winter are just complete freaks of nature compared to what I know.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, proud supporter of APRN and dedicated to helping people reach their goals on and off the field. Wells Fargo, together we'll go far. The state of Alaska reminds you to file online for your 2015 PFD on MyPFD. Paper applications are located at distribution sites in your community. More information at pfd.alaska.gov or on Facebook. This message sponsored by the state of Alaska.
After a several-month delay, the University of Alaska will launch a survey next week that deals with sexual assault on campus. KTOO's Lisa Fu has more.
The Campus Climate Survey will go to 15,000 randomly selected students, faculty, and staff members. It starts with questions about sexual assault awareness training and asks how well the university deals with reports of sexual misconduct. The survey then moves on to more explicit questions about sexual harassment and assault. Here's an example. Since the start of the school year, has someone had sexual contact with you when you were unable to provide consent or stop what was happening because you were passed out, drugged, drunk, incapacitated, or asleep? University attorney Michael O'Brien says results of the survey will remain completely anonymous and won't be published.
This is a way for the university to get a sense of how big a problem sexual assault and sexual harassment are in our campuses. How good a job are we doing at getting out the message about sexual assault and sexual harassment prevention, and whether our training is getting out to our community.
It's been the university's goal to offer sexual assault training to everyone in the school community. Incoming freshmen learned about rules surrounding sexual misconduct and where to go for help during orientation last August. Staff and faculty were trained before the school year started, and Residential Life has been offering sessions. O'Brien says those are just a few examples. He says the Board of Regents was trained for the first time during its meeting last week in Anchorage.
We cannot guess who's going to receive a report of sexual harassment or sexual assault. It could be you, it could be me, it could be a member of our custodial crew, and it could be a regent. And we want them to know as well what they can do if something like that would happen.
Last May, the U.S. Department of Education put the University of Alaska system on a list of about 60 colleges nationwide being investigated as part of a compliance review or for mishandling sexual assault complaints. That list is now at more than 90. Federal auditors from the Office of Civil Rights visited campuses in Anchorage, Fairbanks, Juneau, and Bethel last October as part of a compliance review, which remains ongoing. O'Brien says the auditors are still going through the more than 10,000 pages of documents the university submitted last year and need to do more interviews. This is the first time University of Alaska will conduct a campus climate survey. Back in April, the White House had recommended that all colleges do them and provided sample questions. Initially, the University of Alaska modeled its survey after the federal government's, but O'Brien says there were some problems.
Harassment online wasn't addressed in the survey, and because we have such a large online e-learning community, we did not want to do a disservice to those parts of our population.
The university planned on doing the survey at the end of last year, but didn't want it to come out at the same time as finals. At that point, the university had received more than 20 complaints of sexual harassment and about a dozen reports of sexual assault since the beginning of the school year. In Juneau, I'm Lisa Fu.
The changing laws surrounding legalized marijuana have already created a ripple effect in Sitka. Law enforcement is ironing out the details, and businesses are catering to new clientele with mixed results. KCAW's Emily Kwong has more.
Whoa.
Samantha Cox just got some mail. She dips her hand into a cardboard box, pushes aside the plastic wrap, and pulls out a dragon.
I'd order all the way from China.
And right where the dragon's scales would be is a mouthpiece from which the future owner will inhale smoke.
It's a pipe.
Since January 5th, Evergreen Natural Foods has been selling pipes for marijuana use under Herb and Legend, a separate business begun by Cox and her partner Mitch McGraw that sells its wares inside the natural food store. Before Christmas, they were tossing around ideas for how to bring more money into the store.
what can we sell that's going to bring in customers, that's, you know, going to be unique to the town and something that people will actually spend their money on while, you know, the economy isn't doing so well.
And so they opened a marijuana accessory business. When I visited Urban Legend at Evergreen, Cox said that customers' reactions have mirrored the 30-70 vote of Sitkins on ballot measure 2. 70% support the new venture, or at least keep quiet about it, and 30% are vocally not happy.
They'll come in, they'll be on the phone with someone else and make the comment, oh, I'm never bringing my children here again.
Since public attitude towards pot is so mixed, I was half expecting the new merchandise to be clustered discreetly in the corner, like the porn section tucked away in the back of a video store. But no. The accessories are right behind the counter, proudly arranged. Cox said that was intentional.
We went to California and did like a little, looked around at the different head shops and whatnot there. And we, while there were some great ones, there was also several that smelled bad. They mixed products that could be used for heavy, scary drugs in with their marijuana products. And I want a place where people don't feel ashamed, where they can come in and that it's clean, that it's respectable. Everybody knows it's here, and everybody knows it's normal.
Compared to other states, marijuana has a long history in Alaska. In 1975, Alaska was the first state in the Union to declare that adult citizens had a constitutional right to privacy that protected their marijuana use at home. When Senator Dan Sullivan was in town last Friday, he brought this up.
And he said, well, it's always been legal. And we said, yes, but what's going to change on the 24th is that friends can give each other marijuana.
This is Sitka's municipal attorney, Robin Kochak. What remains illegal, at least until the state starts issuing licenses in May 2016, is selling marijuana and growing it for commercial purposes. Kochak has experience with this paradox. She brings up the example of alcohol in some rural communities, where you can possess the drink, but not buy or sell it.
We, as prosecutors, would laugh about that and call it magical alcohol. If it magically appears, you can drink it. If it magically appears, you can, you know, you can consume it. So, yeah, this could be a real magical time in the middle.
The other aspect of marijuana that will remain illegal indefinitely is consumption in public. Those in violation will be fined up to $100. In this new climate, Sitka Police Chief Sheldon Schmidt doesn't anticipate many tickets will be handed out right away. What is unclear in the year ahead is whether Sitka will allow money to mix with marijuana use.
You need a copy of your card receipt?
No, thanks.
Samantha Cox of Urban Legend has no interest in growing or distributing marijuana herself. She said she's plenty busy keeping up with new orders. Her customer base is a mix of casual users and heavy ones, and a handful of current cancer patients.
Several of these patients have come in and said that they were just... They would have loved to have used marijuana during their treatment, but they were so afraid of the judgment and being labeled a stoner, as if that, you know, makes any difference on their worth. But there's those people, and then there's the folks who just, they're ready for the change.
And it's this second kind of change, a shift in the attitude towards marijuana, that Cox says takes more than a law to make possible. Reporting in Sitka, I'm Emily Kwong.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Condor Airlines, with nonstop service from Ted Stevens International Airport to Germany and beyond. More information available on condor.com. Condor, born to fly. If you're 50 or over, this message is for you. Preventing colon cancer or finding it early doesn't have to be expensive. Most insurance plans and Medicare help pay for screening, and there are simple, affordable tests available that can be done in the privacy of your own home. Talk with your doctor about colon screening today. More at alaskacolonhealth.org. This message sponsored by Ride for Life.
Alternative energy producers in Alaska may benefit from new rules the Regulatory Commission of Alaska is considering. But other independents say the state's power statutes are so antiquated they should be completely revised. KSKA's Ellen Lockyer has more.
Alaska Environmental Power, which harnesses wind energy, filed a petition with the RCA in August of 2013, asking for changes in current regulations that would facilitate independent producers' access to the electrical grid. Right now, the price of independent power is too high, and that is blocking the growth of independent power companies, according to Teresa Klemmer, an attorney representing AEP. Clemmer says Alaska's current regulations are discouraging private investment in alternative energy.
Independent power producers are looking for a fair opportunity to compete.
Part of the problem is the costs utilities face in purchasing alternative energy and integrating it into the power grid. Clemmer says state regulations need to harmonize with federal Energy Regulatory Commission rules when it comes to allowing emerging energy producers to use existing power infrastructure. A 1980s-era federal law encourages traditional electric companies to purchase power from non-traditional producers. Federal regulations require utilities to pay competitive prices for independently produced power, and utilities must purchase lower-priced alternative power whenever possible. Clemmer says only 3% of Alaska's energy comes from renewable sources, compared with almost 38% in the lower 48, because state regulations have not kept up with the times.
We just wanted to bring the state law in line with what the rest of the country is doing.
In 1982, the then Alaska Public Utilities Commission adopted the federal regulations, but those guidelines are not enforced, according to Duff Mitchell, executive director of Alaska Independent Power Producers. Mitchell says AEP's petition to the RCA doesn't go far enough.
It makes some progress, but it doesn't remove the barriers to connecting to the grid.
Mitchell is working on a privately funded hydropower project intended to provide power for Juneau. Mitchell says Alaska's system now forces independents to pay multiple fees before their power even reaches consumers, because each of the six major electric utilities owns a portion of the transmission lines linking Homer and Fairbanks.
And so it makes it very difficult for an independent power that wants to do a phase two project, and maybe the current local utility right next door to them doesn't need their power, but somebody further away, let's say in Fairbanks, does. But yet you need to wheel that power between three other utilities. They pancake it, or they extract fees and costs such that that power no longer is economical.
Mitchell says in Alaska, utilities own both generation and transmission of power, which is counter to FERC rules. He favors a legislative fix to the independence problems. Anchorage's Chugach Electric has filed comments on the RCA docket indicating that, quote, individual utility boards are in the best position to decide whether a particular project offers value to its customers, unquote. Chugach spokesman Phil Steyer says that Chugach already buys power generated by Cook Inlet Regional's Fire Island Wind project. Steyer says his company is backing a different but related approach to the problem, unifying the six segments of the grid.
A unified system operator for the rail belt could establish common rules of the road to include reliability standards and interconnection standards.
Steyer says under the present system, it is difficult for electric cooperatives to see beyond their own service areas. But Mitchell says the transmission lines are mostly state-funded and should be open to all users. The RCA has accepted Alaska Environmental Power's petition, and Clemmer says at its most recent meeting, RCA staffers presented language proposing the changes alternative energy producers want. The next step is an RCA draft rule and public comment. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
The lack of snow and warm temperatures this winter have not gone unnoticed by businesses and recreational enthusiasts in Bristol Bay. KDLG's Matt Martin reports.
My first stop is L&M Hardware to speak with parts manager Mark Gleason. Mark says this is the worst winter he's seen in 22 years, but he says that life goes on and many people have just been using their four-wheelers to get around, among other things.
Funny enough, boats. There's a lot of time this winter when, the rivers and whatnot have been ice-free. And so people have been using modes of transportation that they don't normally use during the winter.
Snow machine sales have been way down at L&M this year. And Gleason tells me that's true around the state.
It's getting to the point to where if there's, not a true promise of snow, people are going to hold off a year. And this has happened 2 years in a row now. So we are going to be thick with unsold machinery.
I cross 2nd Ave to visit Kyle Rolfe at L&M's repair shop.
Hi.
What's up?
Kyle?
That's what my mom calls me.
Is it what I can call you?
Depends. Who are you?
After a quick introduction, Kyle gets right to the point.
This winter and last winter are just complete freaks of nature compared to what I know. I mean, if you went out riding for a half a day, you'd probably have to stay in bed for a day. It'd be so rough and nasty out there, you know?
He tells me that when the snow is good, he and his team can barely keep up with demand.
I mean, actually, the mechanics are out moving lumber and stuff around, you know, and normally we don't have time to do anything but work on, you know, mechanical things.
Rolf says work is so slow, he's actually moving to Hawaii at the end of the month. He's leaving for a job to work on outboard motors.
There's never an off season over there, so we'll be busy all the time.
So, I mean, was the lack of snow, like, was that a factor in your decision?
Actually, it was. You know, the days go by a lot faster when you actually have work to do.
He tells me if Hawaii doesn't work out, he can always head back home. I headed over next to Delta Western.
Ooh, stay with me, battery. Stay with me.
Ken Ricewig, owner of one of Dillingham's three main fuel suppliers, says it's not the lack of snow that's his concern.
It's not particularly the snow, but the warm temperatures that have affected us the most. The warm temperatures mean that people don't burn as much heating fuel, so we don't sell as much.
Grocery stores in Dillingham, like the NNN Marketplace, say business they normally see from the villages in the winter is down because most of the trails haven't opened yet. I'm new here, but I can tell recreation has suffered too. Hunters are struggling to hunt, trappers to trap. Fish and Game says the number of reported harvests are down. So I got off the plane about a week ago, brand new to Dillingham and Alaska. It dawned on me pretty quick that real winter with some real snow is pretty important to business, fun, and life in a lot of Bristol Bay. Maybe it's not too late? I'm Matt Martin for KDLG.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org, and you can follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Annie Ropeek in Unalaska, Ann Hillman and Ellen Lockyer in Anchorage, Lisa Fu in Juneau, Emily Kwong in Sitka, and Matt Martin in Dillingham. APRN's Liz Ruskin reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating jobs and business opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company.
And by
Alaska Premier Dental Group, offering restorative, preventive, and cosmetic dentistry with three offices, two in Anchorage and one in Wasilla. Description of services at smilealaska.com. The 2015 PFD filing season is here. If you have questions about your absences or someone you know away at college or serving in the military, the State of Alaska Department of Revenue encourages you to be proactive. Check out the absence guidelines before applying for your PFD. Visit pfd.alaska.gov and click on eligibility in the banner to learn more. The deadline to apply is March 31st. This message sponsored by the State of Alaska.
ANSEP, the Alaska Native Science and Engineering Program, gives Alaska Native students the inspiration and opportunity to excel in science and engineering careers, building a sustainable future for Alaska. More at ANSEP.net. This message sponsored by ANSEP.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.